And welcome here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night until 10 o'clock on the West Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment presentation that knows what it's talking about, knows what it's going on and on about, knows what it's babbling about, knows what it's joking about. In other words, we know what the point is, and you will never hear us say the N-word without having a really good, socially redeeming, I'm kidding. We're never going to use the N-word, regardless of whether it's a socially redeeming or satirically valid reason, because that's how good we are. I'm joined here by Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, as well as Robert Leonard, and we take apart the world and we put it back together again here on our show nightly. Sometimes we take the world apart and we don't put it back together again. Sometimes the world takes us apart. And man, when they do that, they do not put it back together again. We're going to be talking here this evening about Syria. We do have on the line Jack Armstrong, who is a longtime contributor of our show. We did have Jack on the program very briefly last week, and I'm always grateful to have him on because he's a noted blogger, has appeared as a blogger on the Huffington Post, and has also been featured in a variety of different news sites, websites, and periodicals for print. Jack Armstrong joining us from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Jack, how are you?
Hey, Phil, good. Thank you.
And let's talk about the proposed U.S. military action against Syria. It's on the tips of everybody's tongues, on the tips of everyone's lips. And, of course, there's a great hubbub and furor against the president taking any action at all because America, they tell me, and they don't need to tell me these things. I can see what's happening before my very eyes. They tell me that America...
Hold on. You're still giving your monologue if you want, because I wanted to go and get a shower in to take a bath. I'm sorry. We're on the air, right?
He wanted to know if he could go and get a shower in.
No, we're on the air. Why are you asking, do you want to get a shower in?
It sounds like you're still doing your monologue.
You haven't asked him a question.
Yeah.
I am asking you a question, Jack. Have the patience to let me ask you a question.
All right, but you're going on and on and on.
We have guests on our program that are very rude, and they don't wait for me to finish my question.
Phil, I don't mean to be rude. I apologize if I was being rude to you. The question was going on and on.
You did see how it's going on and on.
Okay. I'll ask questions that could go on for a half an hour, and I don't want anyone to say anything about it, Jack. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude, but that was very rude of you. It was extremely rude of you, Margaret, to back him up.
I'm just trying to move. I'm not trying to be rude at all, Phil.
So they're always trying to do, you know.
I'm not asking you anything.
Phil, I didn't mean to cause an argument. I'm very, very sorry. You're right, that was rude of me. You're very, very right.
I'm asking a question, and it may be going on a little bit longer because it's a setup to other questions.
I understand, Phil. Please forgive me.
Well, don't pout.
Would you give me a break with the running commentary, please?
Just ask you not to pout. If you start getting all...
Hey, Bud, shut up. Just shut it up, you know?
Yep.
And you too.
Phil, you know, I feel this is my fault. That was extremely rude of me.
You know, I will tell you something. I don't think I've ever heard a guy start his radio show asking a guest a question and the guest saying, can I go catch a shower while you still do your monologue?
I understand. You know, it sounded like maybe you were still to do your monologue.
Did I not say how you doing tonight?
Yes, you did. I thought you were saying, how are you doing tonight? I'll get back to you. When I get back to you, I'm...
And you've done a lot of radio interviews.
Bill, can I just say one thing? You're ruining the show by just move past this.
If I hear anybody...
Did Mr. Hall's going to call?
And if Mr. Hall calls...
Let's chalk this one up to Jack Armstrong. This is on Jack Armstrong, okay? This is on Jack Armstrong.
Hold on, Jack. If David Hall calls... He is not to be put on the air. That is an absolute ironclad order. That's an order from me to you.
Yes, sir.
Put this one on Jack Armstrong, if you wouldn't mind, Phil. It was extremely wrong of me to even begin to ask a question.
David.
What did I just tell you, man? Not to put him on the air.
Don't blame him. I'm listening to you in the car. And you're all of a sudden the show, an interview that I wanted to hear.
Hold on for a minute. What's wrong with you?
Nothing.
Well, you came on with don't blame him.
You know what? You'll never get another job in this.
Okay, thank you for cutting him off, bud. That saved your job.
Thank you.
Let's see. Anybody else want to save their job?
I'd like to save my job.
You shut up. How would you like to save your job?
Yeah.
You shut up. So Bud cut off David. The two of you shut up. Great.
I don't want to be told to shut up on the air. Can you do that off the air, please?
All right. When we go to a break, I'll tell you to shut your hole.
That's fine.
Now, Jack, getting back to the question that I was originally going to ask, and because I'm feeling really hurt and petty, I may ask the question for about 3 minutes. It might be a 3-minute question. And you did that. You caused that. Are you aware of that?
I am, Phil. And again, I want everybody out there to know that if Phil comes across as childish or petty, a lot of it is on me.
Don't describe me. Don't describe what I did wrong. You're the guy that said, hey, are you still in your monologue? Because I'm going to go catch a shower. Oh, man.
Well, I can tell you, I just got off an aircraft, was on an aircraft, and I flew in the aircraft from Washington, D.C., had to take another aircraft to fly home to Minneapolis, and I feel, as the kids like to say, I feel grody and greasy. I feel like I got just grease. I got to tell you something, and this is one of those situations where it's almost like I have to tell you so you know how important it is for me to catch a shower, but you know how it is. Sometimes you'll use the bathroom, and maybe you didn't feel you were as hygienic as you could be. And there's a feeling like you're not hygienic, and there might be some odor problems. And so that was another reason why I wanted to get home, you know?
What is he talking about?
Gee, Mr. Armstrong, you didn't wipe thoroughly.
Well, I didn't want to say that.
All right, I understand. We're going to come back after this break, and we're going to start all over again. This is about as lousy an intro to a radio show as I've ever been involved in, as I've ever been a part of. And I've been a part of a lot of crap can intros to radio shows. This one, this breaks all records. This is the worst of any show I've ever heard.
Oh, quit clowning. No, it is not.
I'm not clowning. Yes, it is.
It's on me, Phil.
Yeah, whether it's on you or not, it's on me. We're going to come back here in just a couple of moments. Put him on hold, please. If David Hall calls back, tell him that we are not putting him on the air because guess what? He screamed like a girl, and that right away precludes any return visit to our show.
Yeah, I'm talking right now. Hold on. Mr. Hall, when you want to come on.
Is that him?
Yeah.
Can I talk to him?
Well, Mr. Hall, Mr. Emerson said when you come on, you want like that. Yeah? No, you don't get on. Let me talk to him. Shut up, man.
Good, Robert. You handle it.
Yeah. No, you went,
Good. All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 855-500-7445. We're talking about Syria and whether or not the United States should take the action that is being contemplated, and that is some kind of a missile strike or an airstrike. And we're going to find out why Jack Armstrong and other progressives are very much against this and what's being said about them today in media across this country and across this world. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 855-500-7445. Hello? You gotta tighten that up, will you, bud?
All right.
Tighten it up. World-famous Phil Henry Show, welcome back here. And we're online at philhenryshow.com as well. If you want a backstage pass, that gets you to our video cast as well as our daily podcast of the show, as well as our classic podcast of the show. We have another couple of classic podcasts that we put up over the Labor Day weekend. One of them is Robert Greene. The other is Ted Bell. They're always worth the wait. And philhenryshow.com also has a large archive of audio of our show, full shows, 5,000 hours. It's just, it goes on and on and on. It's a ridiculous embarrassment of riches at philhenryshow.com. All right. Speaking of an embarrassment of riches, we have with us here Jack Armstrong, who is a blogger for a variety of liberal and progressive publications, joining us here from Minneapolis, where his home is. And now all of that other stuff out of the way, and let's get down to the brass tacks here, Jack, about this resolution that the President of the United States would like to be passed by the combined chambers of our United States Congress, which is the limited use of force against the Syrian government. And there's such a resistance to this among even the president's strongest supporters.
Well, there's going to be, Phil, resistance because of the fact that Barack Obama is the president of the United States. That's fine. That's all well and good. And, you know, we voted for him and we support him. But you're asking the progressive movement of this country, of which I've been a part for a long time, American progressives, to move off philosophically of a very strong point, and that is the intervention militarily in the internal affairs of another country. Now,
all right, but we're not just talking about internal affairs, you know.
Well, hold on for a minute, Phil, because there's a lot to be... Before we start to listen to people say that the people of Syria is being or are being attacked by their own government, I know it's going to be the refrain. I want the people to remember that we don't want Barack Obama to become another George Bush. You know, my little boy was saying to me about George W. Obama, and I thought, well, that's good. I put in my blog, you know, that George W. Obama is going to be voting, wants us to vote to go into Syria.
But it's not the same thing. It's not troops on the ground.
Well, no, it's not now. But I know, look, the American people, if you want to look at the mood of the American people, the mood of the American people is we don't want to go into Syria.
Now, you were distressed by a column written, Dean Wheeler of the Northern California Holistic Center had written a column in which he pointed out something, and that was, and I thought it was a good point.
I know what he said.
Well, hold on, let me tell my audience. He said that liberals in the past were known for fighting fascists. In other words, he brought up the Spanish Civil War as an example of progressives and liberals in this country and elsewhere taking up arms and going to Spain in that instance and battling the fascist forces of Franco to maintain the republic of that had been recently instituted there. And what has happened to that liberal movement?
Well, look, I know Dean Wheeler, he's a man who is mostly involved in the holistic healing in the healing arts, and I said to him, Dean, you know a lot about eucalyptus oil and how to rub, give a rub down to a woman, a matronly lady who's spent a lot of money, and you give her a rub down with eucalyptus oil. It doesn't mean you know about, politics.
Well, isn't that unfair, though, to start castigating what a guy does for a living or starting to minimize or make him seem like some little mealy mouth because he happens to be in holistic healing?
No, it's not at all, because as liberals, of course, we believe in many of the alternative healing arts, but when that guy who is used to, he runs a spa and he's used to giving these old ladies rubdowns, now he wants to tell me about...
Why are you talking about rubdowns?
Because that's what this guy does.
He's talking about the Holistic Center for Healing.
All right. Oh, okay. You mean you're talking about the spa?
I'm sorry. Yes, the spa.
Yeah, he has a spa, doesn't he?
Yeah, he and his wife do, yeah.
Okay. So that's great. You know, you can have your opinion if you want to about Assad and about the gassing of his people, but I think it takes a pretty considerable amount of chutzpah, as they like to say, for you to say, let me take a break from rubbing an old lady down with eucalyptus oil.
Why do you keep repeating that particular phrase?
I think, can I jump in here?
I'd really appreciate if you didn't, Margaret, because every time I come on the show, I wind up to debate you and Mr. Henry. I'd rather that you not.
Well, hold on, Margaret, okay?
Well, I'd like to say something here.
I have no doubt you're going to say something. I don't think there's any way that nobody's going to keep you from saying something. I just want to get out what I want to say.
All right, hold on for a minute. So you're saying, first of all, the eucalyptus oil thing, never mind that. I understand. You're basically saying that you disagree with another progressive on the intervention there in Syria. Let me ask you, let me take up the cause of Dean Wheeler, if I might here, Jack.
All right.
What's wrong with that thinking? When he says that there was a time when liberals went to war against fascists, when liberals picked up guns as private citizens and went to war against fascists, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's changed about progressives and liberals that they no longer want to take on the fascists of the world with weapons?
Well, I mean, you asked me, it's a complicated question because of the fact that now this is a different time and a place. I mean, you know, it's a good question, you know. I'm not necessarily agreeing, you know, with some of the sentiments that have been professed by progressives in the past. But Syria is a socialist country, and that does not mean as a progressive I support every socialist country, but I have to, by philosophy, at least by extension, to give some support for the socialist country, you know.
Socialist? Well, Nazi Germany was socialist. National socialism. That was socialism.
That's the Hitler. No, because...
It was just nationals. It was socialism for Germans.
Yeah, it was blood and soil as a fascist, you know.
No, but it was a socialized form of government. Every single socialist form of government, you're saying you support?
No, I'm not saying that at all, and I think you're wrong about the national... So just because the guy called himself a socialist, if you look at Hitler, I mean, you could be right. I don't know. You could be right, you could be wrong, but I just think right now, if you take it in context of right now, you can't have no socialists that are going to support this action against this guy Assad, because he makes us look like we're a bunch of George Bush-type stooges, you know.
All right, our number is... That's an interesting point. A George Bush-type stooges. So any kind of intervention, you know, that it was President Clinton that ordered airstrikes against the Serbians in their genocidal effort against the Muslim people there, the Bosnian Serbs. So my question again, well, let me give the number here. It's 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. We'll just talk here with Dean Wheeler. Excuse me, we're talking about Jack Armstrong. We got Dean Wheeler on the line here.
Oh, jeez.
And you did not want to talk to him?
No, you know, I'd like to be on this program to be able to say everything that I have in my heart and in my mind and to be able to flush it out of me without it being plugged back up again by...
We did schedule him to be on with you.
I know, but... My mind, Phil, is like a clean flushing toilet when I come on your program. I can get all of the waste out. But Dean Wheeler is like sitting someone down. It's like sitting someone down and dropping another log.
Would you have him watch his language?
All right, we don't need that, Dean, okay?
My name isn't Dean, so, boy, you just drop a log. There, I said it again.
I'm sorry, Jack, we don't need that. Would you please not engage in that kind of imagery? All right, just for the mere fact that it's not anything conducive to family listening.
I'm sorry. Please don't call me Dean.
I will not call you Dean. I apologize for that. That was a ridiculous thing to do. I'm sorry. Please don't use that kind of imagery.
All right, well, please don't call me Dean. See, this is what I mean, though, Phil, because if I come on your program and I'm trying to flush from my mind all of the stupid things that I hear, then Dean Wheeler come on, he's dropping more... He's relieving himself into my mind, you know?
I think you sound really stupid right now, Jack, and I've long admired your writings.
Are you talking to me?
No, I'm talking to the other Jack that's standing behind...
Yes, she's talking to you.
Well, look, it's Monday. I know everybody gets discombobulated. So I don't know if that's what the problem is here.
No, nobody's discombobulated. Everybody knows what they're saying, and everyone is dead on point. We're just not listening to each other is the problem. We're going to bring Dean Wheeler on here. And, Jack, you can talk with him, and you can straighten this out. The point is, fascists were engaged by and were fought by liberals and progressives in this past century, the 20th century, the last 100 years, and it is no more. There is no more engaging of the extreme right-wing, suppressive, and destructive regimes of the world. There is no more engaging of those regimes by the progressive movement of this world. And it seems disturbing, at least to a couple of writers, one of them being Dean Wheeler. We're going to be back here with Jack Armstrong on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445, and online at philhenryshow.com. PhilHenryShow.com with a backstage pass. Watch our live streaming video of our show here tonight. Dean Wheeler is standing by. We're going to have Dean on the line as well from Northern California as we continue talking about the intervention in Syria. Why is it that progressives no longer fight fascists, like toe-to-toe, mano-a-mano, bullet by bullet? We'll be back.
That's baloney. You know, that's the biggest baloney that I ever...
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show at 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. Jack Armstrong, along with Dean Wheeler, joining us here. We may have educator Vernon Dozier on the line in a moment because we are talking about something that I think is extremely important. And it's not only important in terms of what the country, our country, will do here in its relations with Syria and the greater Middle East as we continue dealing with the Middle East, I think, in a much more heavy-handed way. And I'm not necessarily in disagreement with that. I was a supporter of the war in Iraq and probably will continue to be a supporter of military intervention in the Middle East because I think that that's an important way of, I'm sorry to have to say this, an important way of dealing with that part of the world.
Phil, you know, it almost, and this is Margaret Gray, ladies and gentlemen, may I say something?
Of course.
Because you were saying don't talk.
No, this is a good time for you to jump in. I'm just, when I have Jack on...
I think what he was saying, Margaret... I'm sorry.
Let me explain it. When I am talking to one person, I'll indicate to others who I would like to speak. But yes, now you may speak.
Well, thank you, Phil. I'm simply saying that when you talk about the Middle East, I don't hear you say it, but it's almost as if I'm hearing you say those people over there.
I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that.
And I think it's your mindset.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I didn't say those people over there.
Was it your instinct to say those people?
What difference does it make?
Because I think you're not humanizing them so much as objectifying them. They are of a certain part of the world that has to be dealt with thus and so. Jack, you know what I'm saying?
I do. Phil, that's what we're trying to keep from happening here. We don't want to objectify a part of the world and say there's a bunch of, there's that over there, let's go over there and let's go ahead and drop a bunch of bombs on that. There's that over there, let's go drop a bunch of bombs on that. We want these people to be people, you know.
Well, I don't know how much more human they can be when I see them on the receiving end of gas, which is in violation of an international accord, which the United States is a party to, which the United States is a signatory to, which the United States is seeking to enforce. And the detractors are the ones that are saying, well, you know, we didn't exactly enforce these international accords, A, B, C, D, when we had the chance, so why should we do it? It's this childish schoolyard argument that puts me off quite a bit. Dean Wheeler on the line here from Northern California. Get Dean on the line. Dean, you've been listening to Jack, and he's been critical of your assessment. You were the one that wrote the blog for the International. You said that there was a time when... liberals fought fascists, when progressives fought fascists, why are they not doing it now?
Well, Phil, I think why they're not doing it now is because they are intimidated from doing it. There is peer pressure. When I saw recently a Humphrey Bogart movie, and it was the movie called, and if you've seen it, you know the one that I'm talking about. It's the one with Peter Lorre. And it's very well known in the gambling casino. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Casablanca.
No, it's not Casablanca. It's with Peter Lorre.
Maltese Falcon.
No. It does have Sidney Greenstream. It has Sidney Greenstream.
Sidney Greenstreet.
Hey, look, Dean, this is Jack. What's your point? Hold on, Jack, and I'll get to you in just a second. I know you had a full half hour here. I know, but what is your point? You're talking about Sidney Greenstream. It's not Sidney Greenstream.
Sidney Greenstreet. What's the point?
Well, excuse me for breathing. My point was that in the film, he plays a guy that fought in the Spanish Civil War. And he plays a liberal who went over and fought in the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah, that was Casablanca.
It was Casablanca, Dean.
No, it was not Casablanca. Well, then what movie are you talking about? I don't know. I'm trying to remember. I would agree with Phil and agree with Mark. It sounds like a Casablanca to me. What was the other one you mentioned, Phil?
I'm not going to get bogged down in remembering a Humphrey Bogart movie. The point is, I remember the character. I remember the character saying that, you know, I fought in the... Was it Key Largo?
I fought in Key Largo. No, he's asking the movie Key Largo.
Was the movie Key Largo?
I don't even know that. I don't even know what you're talking about there. No, it wasn't.
Because in that film, he was a war veteran as well. The point that you're making is what? That there were guys that fought against the fascists.
There were, Phil. There were progressives and liberals that fought against the fascists. It was a great time to be a progressive and liberal. And when I see that, I feel small. I feel like I'm less of a man. I don't think progressives equip themselves as men. When you see those images, when you hear those stories of taking up arms against repressive fascist regimes, and when I see that, and when I hear about that, I'm embarrassed to be around my woman. I'm embarrassed to be around children. I'm embarrassed to be around anybody because I don't feel that I measure up to anything.
All right, there is Dean Wheeler. What do you think of that, Jack?
Well, look, I don't have time to be all petty and to be a little tiny kid and talk about manhood. You talk about the days back when they used to fight the fascists in Spain. That's a long time ago, my friend. And today we're talking about a very different thing indeed. We're talking about the need for progressives now to help America see that this interventionism is wrong for this country, that there's too much to be done in this country here. And
let me ask you a question here, Dean. Or excuse me, Jack. I'm sorry, okay?
That's the fourth time you've called me this imbecile's name, okay?
What are you talking about, imbecile?
He's called me Dean about four times.
All right, well, a mistake's happened.
What did they go with? They call you Jack?
I apologized, and that's enough.
Would you please call him Jack? Would you do me that much?
No, I will not. I'm asking the question. Now I forgot what the question was.
Well, that figures, you know. Let me jump in. I've got a point I want to make, Phil. The progressives of this country are doing a great... I think we did a great thing by putting Barack Obama in office. I think we've done a great thing by enforcing the argument in favor of health care and just putting it on the table. I think we've done a great thing by bringing the subject of race relations back to the front of the stove, so to speak, to the front burner, so to speak, off of the back griddle and put it on the front. I don't know if it was on a griddle or anything, but it was on the back burner, you know.
Yes, the term is back burner, not back griddle.
Well, I understand that. So,
We're not going to get bogged down in that, are we?
No, but I just looked it up. It is griddle.
That ain't griddle. It's back burner. Go ahead.
Yeah, all right. Fine. You say whatever you want. I thought it was griddle. But bringing the argument forward...
You're going to talk about a griddle?
Will you never mind and just say what it is that's being brought to the front burner, please?
What's being brought to the front burner is race relations. It's the idea of health care for all. It's the idea of treating labor better. It's the idea of making sure that capital is working efficiently. Because capital is what our business in this country is all about. It's capitalism. Those are things that I think are good. I think the negative, though, is when we sit and we see what's going on in Syria, and suddenly, as my wife Emeralda said the other night, and I had nothing to say to her. She was looking at the television and the Syria news, and she looked back at me, and she said, "Do you feel as if your testicles are being drawn back up into your body?" And I said, "No, I don't. Why would you say that?" She said, "Because you should look at what is going on over in Syria and look at how progressives used to fight fascists, and you sit there as your manhood is being drawn back up into your body as if you're regressing to the physical level of a three-year-old, and you don't hear."
I want to comment on that. May I comment on that, Phil?
Go ahead.
I don't know. I don't want to comment on your marriage or your wife or anything, but if my wife said to me that I looked like my testicles was being sucked back up into my body,
I'd feel hurt. I'd feel real. I would say to her, what do you mean by that? You know?
Well, I mean, what she meant by that is we didn't look like we were men.
Well, the only thing that doesn't make us look like men is you come on this program tonight, Dean, and you're going, you're very mealy-mouthed about it, you know?
I'm what?
I said you're very mealy-mouthed about it.
I didn't understand what he said, Phil. What did he say?
Mealy-mouthed.
Mealy-mouthed. You're mealy-mouthed.
Mealy-mouthed? What is that? Is that, you mean the Disney character?
What Disney character you talk about?
Mealy-mouthed. M-E-A-L-Y.
Oh, I'm so sorry. All right, Mealy Mouse. I thought you were saying Minnie Mouse.
Minnie Mouse? You know, Dean, you can write a good blog and you can make all kind of points that you want to make, but at the end of the day, if you're mentally deficient, if you got something wrong with you, there's nothing I can do about it. And I'm going to tell you this right now. If you want to say that I'm not a man because I won't fight against Assad and pick up weapons like they did against the Spanish Civil War, that's your business. But let me tell you something, my friend. It's a different day and a different age today. It's not the way that it used to be. It's different, and we have to attack these problems in a different way.
I'm just saying, you know, when we saw that movie, and I can't remember the name of it right now.
I'm telling you right now, it's called Casablanca.
Casablanca. You never heard of that film?
Yes, I've heard of Casablanca. I know that movie. This is a movie where Peter Lorre gets killed by the French authorities as he's stealing some letters of transit.
Casablanca, man.
Well, Phil is right. It's Casablanca, but you're acting like a real... I don't think that's the movie.
And in that movie, Humphrey Bogart plays a guy that owns the Rick's Cafe, and he used to be a freedom fighter in Spain, and he fought against the fascists, and he gives that speech at the end about the problems don't amount to a hill of beans, right?
Right, yeah, and he's talking to he's talking to some Swede.
Ingrid Bergman.
Well, I don't know who it was. She's very, very attractive, except I didn't like her teeth. You know who I mean, Emeralda? Yeah.
Didn't like her teeth. I got to take a break, okay?
Well, all right, Phil.
All right, hold the line. That guy is, you know...
What's wrong with him?
What do you mean, what's wrong with him? He's one of your best friends.
He's not a best friend. He's someone that I'm conversant with.
Well, he sounds like he's way out there tonight, even further out than he usually is. Now, that's a guy that's got a history of heroin abuse, arrest for domestic violence. He's spent time in jail, and he spent time as a federal fugitive. So he can have all of the Northern California holistic healing centers and aromatherapy and given fat old ladies rubdowns with eucalyptus oil. Oh, man.
Get, you don't call up the cops.
I'm not going to call up the cops. I'm just saying there's something off about that cat. That's all I'm saying. It's the Phil Henry Show here, 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. We'll be back as we continue discussing Syrian intervention, whether we should, whether we shouldn't, you know, and whatever, man. World famous Phil Henry Show. It's the Phil Henry Show, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. By the way, thank you for the call from Sacramento during the break. We are on in Sacramento now, one of our new affiliates, KSTE. Fantastic to be with you guys. And more to follow, the world-famous Phil Henry Show here at 855-500-7445 and online at philhenryshow.com. On the line with me is Jack Armstrong, along with Dean Wheeler, and we're going to bring on educator Vernon Dozier here in a second. And Margaret, you wanted to sort of lend a couple of you know thoughts in on this, and I would say as a liberal, I think your opinion is going to be important as well. What do you think about the idea of intervention in Syria, and what do you think about this comparison between today's progressives and the progressives of the 30s, who took up arms in conflicts like the Spanish Civil War?
Well, I think I agree with Jack that it is a different time and a different place. I agree with Jack that we have to be a little more mindful of the current situation as opposed to what it was in the 30s. Yes, there was fascism in the 30s. There was a brutal fascism that was threatening the entire world, primarily motivated by Adolf Hitler. So I think that your points are very well made, Jack, against Dean. Dean, I like your blog, but I think it's wrong to write a blog about armed intervention because your wife made a comment about some sort of juvenile comment about whether your testicles have dropped yet. I don't think that that's a very good way of looking at this. And so, again, I would say that you had a very good point there, Jack, in your opening series of comments.
You know, I appreciate that very much, Margaret, but I want to quote the wolf in the movie Pulp Fiction. Let's not start passing out the BJs just yet, okay?
Excuse me?
No, I was quoting the wolf.
Don't use a crude term. I'm trying to get our guests away.
You remember the wolf? Are you kidding me or something? The Pulp Fiction movie, let's not start passing out the mouth jobs just yet.
I'm not passing out any such thing. I am making a point of compliment to you.
I think that's insulting.
No, it's not. No, I'm not trying to insult her. Let's just everybody keep their feet on the ground, and let's not start daisy-chaining it. Oh, boy, you know, I don't mind. She should be offended by that, and I think you just lost all your points with Miss Gray.
No, he did not lose all of his points with me, no. I'm not that much of a prude. He's quoting the Harvey Keitel characters. Let's not start passing out the, you know.
All right, well, how would you put it then?
Well, let's not start passing out the...
Oh, my God, you say you're going to mumble like... Yeah, that's what she did. She mumbled as if she had...
All right. I mean, can we take this any further into the sewer? Oh, boy.
What are you talking about in the sewer? I'm trying to clean it up.
Well, cleaning up a line like, let's not start passing out the mouth jobs or whatever he said by saying,
I am approximating the sound of a woman. Never mind.
Yeah, you noticed I ain't said nothing.
Yeah, I noticed. I noticed how much it felt good in here that both of you guys have been keeping your mouth shut.
Yeah, well, I'm going to keep my mouth shut now. But that lady come on and talk about mumbling and everything.
I'm trying to clean. You two are the ones.
Look, don't blame them. And you're the guy that started it, Jack. I was about to call you Dean.
You call me Dean? Why not? You've been insulting me through the hour. Call me Dean. All I tried to say was, if she's going to compliment me, and I appreciate her to compliment me, let's not start please.
So I cleaned it up. Let's not start passing out the...
Oh, yeah. Are you Congo?
Just yet.
And how is that more grown up?
Because I'm not vocalizing a crude, rude term.
Oh, boy. I will tell you right now, Phil, I think to say BJ is far more adult than to say you're rude. You know?
All right. I think we've made this asinine point long enough, and we've gotten once again further astray of the... She was complimenting you.
Well, I...
Were you going to say it's an obvious mistake?
When he called you he, I'm Margaret, you're a beautiful woman, but you do tend to sound a little masculine. I don't, and that's that turns on a lot of guys, you know, because they like a woman who has the testosterone.
Testosterone?
Yeah. Why is everything a question with you?
Because I'm incredulous as to this conversation. May I be allowed to leave the studio? No, I'm not going to the toilet. I'm going to go outside and smoke. I'm going to go out and smoke. I bought a box of cigars tonight. And I'd like to smoke one. Does that make me butch?
Well, I just got done with saying about...
Testosterone. I bought a box of Roitan.
Go ahead and have one.
No, it doesn't. Women are smoking cigars now.
Well, women were smoking cigars about 5-6 years ago. I don't know if they're still...
Oh, is that right? Well...
Do whatever you need to do.
Roitan? God almighty. If we talk about a want to boil your guts loose, that'll do it.
All right, Dean Wheeler, along with Jack Armstrong. Vernon Dozier is going to join us now from Glendale, California, on the notion of progressives and whether or not progressives are, excuse me, reflective of a strong internationalist sentiment that at one time prevailed. Obviously not, Vernon. Obviously today progressives, at least in this country, are isolationists.
To, but I think I'm a conservative. There's nobody that I know that's more conservative than me. All right, I am way to the right, and that doesn't make me Adolf Hitler. I'm saying I'm way to the right on issues that Americans, you know, are debating with the brain that can be, that the brain, the maximization of our brain, Okay, I'm way, way. Who's at the carnival, by the way? Is there someone at a carnival?
You are.
Oh, you're right, Phil. I'm sorry. I heard a restaurant.
You got to get the people on the same page to be on your program.
I'm on the same page, my man.
Yeah, you don't even know you're at a carnival, huh?
Hey, why don't you get up close to the phone? Let's you and me get close. Let's talk, okay, Mr. Progressive?
Yeah, you want to get close to me, huh?
Not in the way that you'd like to, but I want to ask you something.
Okay.
I want to ask you something. I heard this gentleman, Mr. Wheeler. You there, Mr. Wheeler?
Team Wheeler here, yeah.
I heard this gentleman say that there was a time when progressives would go to war against the fascists, and I have not heard you give one decent explanation as to why it is that they don't do that anymore.
The reason why I'm not going to give explanation is because the hour is over. There's only 1 minute left.
How the hell does this gay blade...
All right, we do have to go, and the name-calling has got to end, so thank you very much, Vernon. I wish we had more time.
I just came on your lousy show.
And I apologize, folks, but we do have to break off our discussion of this. We may continue it at another time. Who knows? Who can be sure? Who can tell in these changing times? Sorry. I don't know why it is we didn't... why didn't we get the heads up on that?
I don't know. Said you want to talk about it.
All right, we'll be right back here, folks, with more news from the world-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com. We have Don Berman to update us on a couple of things. It's the Phil Henry Show. Back in a few minutes here. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show every night till 10 p. on the West Coast, 1 a. on the East Coast. We've gone to an earlier time, and if you're a longtime Phil Henry fan, and you found us, but other fans of ours you know of, but they're, you know, walking in the darkness, let them know that we've moved to a earlier time, 7 to 10 Pacific, 10 to 1 Eastern. And again, many thanks to our affiliates and our audience and our advertisers. New affiliate on board this week, KSTE Sacramento. We're very, very grateful and happy to be back on in Sacramento. And some other huge, huge announcements to be making here very soon. A reminder as well about our website, philhenryshow.com, which is we talk an awful lot about it because the digital age is upon us, ladies and gentlemen, and whether we like it or not, it's here, and there's a lot of opportunity for consumers, for listeners of radio shows, at least we think, because we're able to make our show available to you, not just via our radio broadcast, but as well digitally online, full shows, all 3 hours, every single solitary show we've done for the last, 15 years, let's say. And all there, as well as a video cast, as well as a podcast of The Daily Show and our archive podcast, a classic podcast, a lot of stuff to be had at philhenryshow.com. We have an online store, and we have a Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie, Ted's of Beverly Hills t-shirts. We got Phil Henry Show mugs and hats. So, you know, you can what, bud?
Yeah, get the whole Phil Henry experience and everything. Yeah.
All right, so
you can groove to the Phil Henry experience if that's what you. I'd like. Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
There is a series of downloads, the Margaret Gray downloads, are there not?
No, there are not. There's only Bobby Dooley and Ted Bell.
All right.
Margaret, we'll get to that, okay?
Oh yeah, you'll get to it. You do that. You go ahead. You do that, Caballero. You get to it.
Don't worry about it. We'll get to it. The Phil Henry Show website, philhenryshow.com. Vernon Dozier was on with us in the final segment there of last hour, and I promised him a little bit more airtime. Not necessarily, though, Vernon, about the Syria situation, huh?
I don't... thank you very much, Phil, for putting me on your program. I don't really feel like, jawjacking that too much anymore because I think the liberals are going to eat themselves. I think if you've ever seen the only thing about that zombie fad that I enjoy is when I see the Walking Dead, I imagine them as all of the progressives and liberals in this country eating each other's you-know-what and eating each other a new one. And I just laugh because that's what's happening to progressives right now, and I think it's emblematic of that is the Syria debate. You've got on the one side the Dean Wheeler, but don't get me wrong, Dean Wheeler doesn't sound to me like a man who has the courage to I'm sorry, I shouldn't say this, but he just doesn't sound like a very courageous man.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Are you saying that because he sounds a bit fey, or he may sound effeminate? Is that it?
I did not use that word, ma'am.
But no, but I know full well what you're referring to. Is that it?
I'm saying...
Because his point of view is decidedly more aggressive. He thinks that progressives need to go to the offensive and need to share in the battle, whereas the other Jack Armstrong doesn't.
Well, and I'm not a big fan of Jack Armstrong. He sounds like an insular foreigner, if you want my honest opinion.
Well, what does that mean, an insular foreigner?
What it means is he sounds like a guy that doesn't come from here. He wants to be an American and wants to pretend like he's an American, but he's got an accent that sounds like he just got off a banana boat. I'm sorry.
That's not necessary, you know.
Well, I'm sorry, Phil, but these people that...
These people?
Yeah, that's exactly what I said, Miss Gray, if I can get out my point here.
Margaret, you know, it's his segment.
Oh, it's his segment. I was continually last hour...
I don't think anyone kept her from saying anything.
Her?
Can everybody be a little less petty here? Because we're not referring to you as Margaret and we refer to you as her, because we're not saying these people instead of you people. Can we just be less petty? Can we just move along the line of thought that we're on instead of everybody taking offense at every bloody thing that is being said on this show?
Hey, finally said it.
There you go, Ms. Emery. That's good. Thank you.
Oh, shut up.
All right. Now, your point, Margaret?
My point is simply this. I think it's offensive for him to say that Mr. Wheeler sounds effeminate.
I'm just telling you that for a guy who sounds like he couldn't pick up a can of Raid against an ant, you know, as I've often said, I'm a volcano surrounded by ants because of my, you know, I feel frustrated because I've got so much to say. And I have to come on the Phil Henry Show and say it because I've got a classroom full of kids, high school students, that are playing grab A and they're grabbing each other's rear end and throwing spit wads and while I'm trying to tell them what's going on with the world as it's going right down the chute. And so I come on this program to be taken seriously. And I've got the radio equivalent of you people playing, I'll say it, you people playing grab ass.
We're not playing any grab ass around here. We may not be agreeing with you, but it isn't grab ass, all right?
So to you, this program is just a bunch of people chasing each other in a parking lot after hours.
That's exactly right. When I come on the Phil Henry Show, I might as well be on with a bunch of people playing grab ass in a parking lot after the Denny's is closed. For all the good it does me.
You know what? This show isn't on for your benefit.
Well, no, I know that. I'm wondering whose benefit...
Who's? You don't even talk good. You shouldn't... criticize Mr. Henry.
We'll talk a lot better than you do, man. Talk a lot way better than you do, Mr. Platehead. You know,
all right, well, enough of the insults, Vernon. And, Margaret, let's just get to your point here, which is that the progressive point of view is now a... There's a civil war going on.
Absolutely, there's a civil war. And it reminds me of Walking Dead. And as far as I'm concerned, the progressives are zombies and they're eating each other a new one.
That's the part that offends me. I don't mind that you say the progressives are perhaps consuming each other, but when you keep saying eating each other a new one, I know exactly, my mind...
Ma'am, that's where your mind goes, you know.
Ms. Gray, if your mind goes there...
Anyone's mind would go there, and it is not a very appealing sight of zombies giving each...
What are you laughing at, Bud?
Nothing.
Look, I'm not laughing. I hear exactly what she's saying. She's bringing up the image of zombies giving each other it starts with an R.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm not going any further than that.
All right, so zombies are performing a particularly disgusting sex act on each other.
No, I didn't say... When he says they're eating each other...
Would you people please?
Phil, this is a program I will only partake in... if it's adult in nature, so I will call these things out.
All I said was the progressives are like a bunch of ghouls that have... There are a lot of walking ghouls that have not been killed yet because they're walking around.
Yes.
Well, and they're eating...
They're eating each other. Can we just end it with that instead of eating each other anew...
I guess I'm only
Maybe you can guess. Mr. Henry just laid it out for you.
Oh, well, okay, Einstein. Thanks a lot.
All right, well, we're going to break here and try to get back on track yet again. One of the problems we have is you big mouths right here.
Oh, I see. We're the problem.
Yes, you're the problem. You big mouths jump in and everything gets confused. The whole purpose of having a panel is to have you guys clarify, to have you guys pick up on a point that might need a little bit of expanding upon, and to help us do that. But instead, you take it off into weird land, eating each other. Oh, that's a sex act between zombies. Unbelievable that we get... I think his point is a very good point, this so-called civil war. Among, you know, a civil war among progressives. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Our number is 855-500-7445. 855-500-7445. Back with Vernon Dozier. And actually, he's on to talk about, believe it or not, baseball. And we'll try to get into that when we come back. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Father James McQuarters is checking in here. And again, I apologize if there has been anything said that bespeaks vulgarity. We don't want to do that on this show. It was an unfortunate phrase that we used by Vernon Dozier, and I simply want to give the father his due. He wants to talk. Father McQuarters has been on our program any number of times talking about different theologic and moral issues. He's a good man, and he's constantly giving us, I suppose, some balance on the program. Father James McQuarters. Father McQuarters, my apologies, first of all, to you, sir.
Well, Phil, I'm not calling your program to say anything other than I have always expected from your program. The very, very uplifting conversation, and kinds of conversation I think that all families can listen to.
I understand.
And so you understand what when I tuned in, and Father Staley and I were coming back from doing our novena there for Mrs. Wharton, who had passed on this past weekend, and she was a wonderful woman, that we heard this man, Mr. Dozier, saying the things that he said. Now, do you have him there?
Vernon, Father McQuarters is on the line. I know you know him very well from Belmar Academy.
Father McQuarters, this is Vernon Dozier.
Vernon, how are you?
I'm good, Father.
And Vernon, my point of view, you're over at the carnival at St. Parvins, is that right?
Yes, we're at St. Parvins raising money for to put the new facade on the church, because I don't know if you know this or not, Phil. Should I go into the story, Father?
You can go very briefly into the story, but the reason why I called is to ask you about this reference that you made with regard to The Walking Dead, and of course, as Phil said, the entire conversation was supposed to be about the progressive movement.
Yeah, that is correct, Father, and I will apologize up front. I'll tell you what it was, but first, we're at St. Parvin's, Phil, because there is no St. Parvin. There is no such person as St. Parvin. Someone named this church, and for the last 21 years, it's been called St. Parvin. Now, there was research done, and even to the point where two people from the parish were sent back to the Vatican and did their own ecclesiastical research. They had access to the ecclesiastical library, to the Vatican library, and nowhere is there a St. Parvin, P-A-R-V-I-N. They looked at St. Marvin. They couldn't find any, so they have to rename the church.
Well, why was it called St. Parvin?
We think it's because someone wanted to start a Catholic church and wanted to call it a saint's name, and they were all taken, and so they came up with some Mickey Mouse name like this. I don't know.
I don't know the St. Parvin. It's a name that might have been created by someone who had been drinking too much, but that was the name they gave it. And I agree with Vernon that it should be changed. I wonder if Vernon, not to make a too light a point here, but I wonder if they're trying to call it St. Vernon. Do you know if there's a St. Vernon?
I do not know if there's a St. Vernon. That would be interesting to look up.
Well, I did one day. I looked up to see if there's a St. Vernon. I tried to find if there was a St. St. Giselle or different names. I've not found a St. Vernon yet. But the name Vernon is a primarily African-American. You know that?
Yeah, I know that.
You see... Vernon, you can't be that way in life.
I already know that the name Vernon is primarily a black man's name.
All right, and what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that, Vernon?
What's wrong with that, Vernon?
Never mind.
You see, Mr. Henry, I think that you have to look into your soul about that, Vernon. And I would like you to come to reconciliation about that. Because if you're having a hard time with your name being Vernon, there might be a racist thought.
There is no racism inside of me, Father. There's none whatsoever. You see, I grew up, and I was a young man that they tried to weaken. My mother tried to weaken me. My father tried to weaken me. But I would not let them do that to me. And they gave me the name Vernon because they were hoping that I would come screaming home to mommy if people gave me a hard time, you see.
I understand that.
They were hoping that I would come screaming home to my daddy if people... I don't do that. A lot of people do. A lot of people can't take it. You give me the name Vernon. You give me the name Leon. You give me the name Herb. Go ahead. You give me the name Lionel. Go ahead. Give it to me. I don't care. I'm white. And I will gladly take on those names. Because I don't have to go running home to Mommy. Because I happen to have a name that sounds like I'm a member of the Four Tops. You see what I'm saying?
Vernon, I think the very thing you're saying there bespeaks of racism.
Yeah, what is your problem, man? You got the name Vernon. It may sound like a black guy's name. So what?
That's exactly what I say. When my mother looks at me and my father looks at me and says, "Hey, Vernon," and I say to my father, "You think I'm going to come on and go,
Daddy, how come I have to be baby?"
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. That pisses my father off. Excuse my language, Father.
Well, to the point that we were... Can we get to the point that we're here to talk about?
Yeah, let's please do, because you used the term walking... You were talking about The Walking Dead, Vernon.
I was talking about the TV program, The Walking Dead, yes, Father. And I said that the liberals and progressives were like a horde of zombies that were going to eat each other a new one.
That was the problem, as a phone call was made to me. Is Margaret there?
Yes, Father, I'm right here.
Margaret Gray called me. But Margaret called. She was very distressed, and she said that she was on the program right now with you, and you talked about zombies with their faces pressed into each other's, you know, and...
Well, that's not what I meant. What I meant, when I say eat each other a new one, it's an old term that means, you know, mess each other up.
There's no doubt that a zombie's going to mess you up. A zombie, as we've seen in the zombie movies, Father Staley's made up. You like those zombies, right, Father Staley?
Yeah.
And I that's fine. But I'm simply saying to you, Vernon, that when you use a term like that, it bespeaks a kind of carnality and a debased sexual activity that I don't think we want to expose children to.
I understand that, Father. I didn't think there was any problem because I was talking about zombies. I was talking about zombies eating each other a new one, and I wasn't even thinking of the sex act.
Yeah, see, that's my point. I wasn't either until a great exception was taken by you, Margaret.
Well, Phil, don't hang this on me because I am the moral arbiter of this program because I have to be the individual who is looking after this program. Don't hang it on me.
Well, but it could have very easily have just been passed by. We didn't have to get into a big song and a dance about it, is all I'm saying.
Well, I don't know that I agree with you, Phil. I don't know.
Why not?
Because I think that, to the most part, you're talking about zombies, I know that. You're talking about The Walking Dead, I know that. But you're still talking about, even if they're ghouls, you're talking about them dropping down and performing a sex act on each other, eating each other's you-know-whats.
Yeah, they're eating each other in a dirty place.
And I didn't...
Yeah, see, this is where this has gone.
Can't blame me. I mean,
And you can't blame me either. Margaret's the one that called in. You know...
Oh, well, this is where it's gone, so thanks very much.
Oh, grow up, Phil. I called the father because I was having a moral quandary.
What is everybody getting mad for?
Because you're a little capper there, man. Please.
Yeah, you're laughing about it, Mr. Henry.
Let the record show that Phil's laughing.
How can I not laugh? Yeah, you're talking about... We're talking about progressives. We're talking about something political. How did it get down... How did it devolve to the point of zombies eating each other's... You know. Oh, man.
And the more you laugh, the more credulity... Credulity, that's a word, look it up. The more credulity you lend, okay, Phil?
Yes, credulity.
What's that mean?
Believability.
Hey, get the big brain on Phil.
All right, so what?
The point is, the more you laugh at it, the more credulity and credibility, actually credulity does not mean believability, credulity means your ability to believe something. It's even more specific. And you give the credulity, which means you believe that zombies...
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Henry, that you believe the zombies got the faces planted.
Okay, so that's what I believe. I've never seen the show, not much, but I believe that zombies have their faces planted. Jesus.
Well,
yeah. We'll be back with more on the on what it is that this guy wants to talk about, which is baseball. Baseball. That's what we want to talk about. And one of the issues that we want to talk about is apparently the Anaheim Angels. You know that the Anaheim Angels, their real name is the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
It's not the other way around.
No, it's Los Angeles Angels. I was just thinking about that.
It's not the Anaheim Angels of Los Angeles.
No, it is not the. It's the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. But there's been, down through the years, the most, in my opinion, the most asinine debate and changing of names and this just sort of ridiculous controversy over the Anaheim Angels, folks. This is a local baseball team here in the Southern California. You know. They were the L.A. Angels. Then they became the California Angels. Then they became the Anaheim Angels. Then they became the L.A. Angels of Anaheim. And I suppose the entire thing has been, I don't know what you would call it. The entire thing has been kept alive by the city of Anaheim, wanting the name of their city on any team that calls home their city, especially any team that calls home their city that they have contributed dollar bills to. And in the refurbishing there of Anaheim Stadium into Angel Stadium, that is exactly what has happened. So Vernon Dozier will be back to talk about that with us. And more, your phone calls at 855-507-445, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
I'm talking about credulity. Credulity.
Oh, brother.
Hello.
I'm just saying, these zombies have got a mouth full of.
It's the Phil Henry Show here from the El Pacifico each and every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast. And our radio show is devoted to just one goal and one goal only. Truth is our bitch. All right, we have with us here Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. Vernon is an educator, is a longtime contributor to our program, and is at the St. Parvin Renaming Festival, which I don't think I've ever heard of any event such as this. It's, Vernon, an event whereby they're trying to raise money to change the facade of the church to get a new name for the church because St. Parvin doesn't exist.
Nutshell, yeah, Phil, that's exactly right. St. Parvin, there's no St. Parvin, and they don't know. And I thought Father McQuarters, he was very cute, and he said, well, why don't they name it St. Vernon? And I said, I would be very grateful. And then somebody made the joke about there's no black saints.
Yeah, I did, but I didn't mean nothing by it.
Yeah, but you see, that means that the name Vernon only black people have and me. So that means all black men and Vernon Dozier. And I have no problem with that, but why? Why would you say that?
Let's forget that, shall we?
No, I can't just stand that way.
Yeah, but why would it be all black guys and then me?
Let's forget about that. It's the way Bud is, okay?
No black saints.
Well, is there a Saint Herbert?
Never mind, will you, Bud, before I throw your ass, not just out of the studio, before I throw your ass onto a freeway in the fast lane...
That'd be hit.
There you go. You would be, wouldn't you?
Then I probably would die.
There's number two he got right.
You're pretty sharp tonight, bud.
Just cool it. All right, Vernon Dozier joining us. And so St. Parvin, all right, we'll get off of that.
And you know something? There may very well be some black saints. In fact, I bet you there are black saints. There's no African-American saints, if that's the point you're making.
Yeah, because there's no St. Leon.
Mr. Henry, I will not continue.
If you don't shut up, bud, I swear I'm going to give you this left hand right into the chin, man. Boom, you'll be out. Just like that.
I don't know why you put up with it. St. Leon, what does that mean? So everyone... I don't know.
All right. Vernon, thank you for being with us. Enough of St. Parvins. Let's talk about why you're on the program here tonight.
Well, the reason why I came on originally, Phil, and I thank you very much, and thank you, Margaret, and yes, even you, Bud, thank you for welcoming me. And you, Robert, thank you very much. The Los Angeles Angels...
Well, you're very welcome, sir.
You're more than welcome for saying you're welcome.
You're welcome.
I didn't say anything to you, did I?
Okay, stop.
I'm trying to stop, Phil.
Go ahead.
The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim would have the freedom to throw out the last two words of that long moniker under the terms of a deal before the Anaheim City Council on Tuesday night. Now, that is before the Anaheim City Council. At issue is the baseball team's lease on a 47-year-old Angels, its lease on a 47-year-old Angel Stadium, which runs through 2029, but could be terminated by the team as soon as 2016. The council will decide, will consider a deal that will, in part, delay the team's option to leave Anaheim until
2019, I think is what it said.
You're right, 2019. The delay would allow the two sides to come to an agreement that could keep the team in Orange County until 2057. Now, I want you to consider that year, 2057. I want all of the listeners out there to consider the year 2057. Phil, I know you were born in the year 1952.
Yes, I was.
All right, that would make you, God willing, Phil, you'd be 105 years old.
Which that would be great, but I don't anticipate it.
Yeah, so you'd be gone before the Angels left Orange County under this new deal. Now, part of the deal would allow the team to have absolute control and exclusive rights of its name, which could result in a name change to simply the LA Angels. The Angels want to be called the Los Angeles Angels because it's a far more popular name. There's more people in Los Angeles than there are in Anaheim. There's more people in Los Angeles and more people to buy merchandise, more people to identify with the team than there are in Anaheim. And I have long said this. I have long been a proponent of having names on teams that are big names, that are the big city names, and let's get rid of these small city names. Most of the problem, Phil, is in the NBA, where you have teams like the Orlando Magic. Now, I know Orlando is a city that houses a great many features and fun and... But the name Orlando itself is not anything. It's just so small town that I have a hard time watching an NBA final between, say, the L.A. Lakers and the Orlando.
But what are you going to call a team like that?
I think you have to call it Miami or Florida. You have to give it a name that's a big name. If people are going to say, that's a team that I want to be all over, you know.
What about the Green Bay Packers?
All right, now the Green Bay Packers, that's a good point.
That's a very good point, yeah.
The Green Bay Packers would be far better. They're very popular. There's no question the Green Bay Packers are popular. But think of how much more popular they'd be if they were identified with a larger market like the Milwaukee Packers. Milwaukee is just only 90 miles away. And it boggles the imagination why it is the people that named that team and the people that are responsible for that football team's financial well-being, why it is that year in and year out they didn't take the opportunity with the fan base that the Green Bay Packers have to give it an even bigger fan base and give it and put it in the Milwaukee Packers, see?
But doesn't that – first of all, let me ask you a question. The Green Bay Packer fan base is a fan base that's truly international. Don't you agree? I mean,
well, what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is, the fan base of the Green Bay Packers is not in Green Bay, Wisconsin alone. I mean, if it was, they wouldn't be able to, at least in terms of, for instance, merchandise, they wouldn't be able to survive, and they sure wouldn't be able to survive in terms of well, I guess they'd survive because they have the TV deal with the NFL, but they wouldn't have the merchandising money or the notoriety. You know, I think don't you think the name Green Bay is a boutique name? Don't you think it's a name that has great value?
I don't know what you mean by boutique.
Well, what Phil is saying, Vernon, the name Green Bay Packers is almost like Brooklyn Dodgers. It's there's a historic and boutique value, a signature value to that name.
Well, I think you can get all of that clever talk is all well and good, but I'm talking about money, okay? Money. You know, that's what I'm about. I'm not about just living for money, but I do believe that money is where it's at.
No, I do too. If you take the name Green Bay Packers away from the Green Bay Packers and you call them instead the Milwaukee Packers, I think it shrinks the fan base.
See, I don't get that. Where are you people coming from? Milwaukee is 50 times big. I don't know how much bigger it is than Green Bay, but it's a gigantic compared to Green Bay.
But, I mean, people like the name Green Bay Packers.
People like the name Green Bay Packers, but if it's the Milwaukee Packers, see, you don't get it. What I'm talking about is get rid of the small-town names. Now, you got the Anaheim Angels. That's going to that will commit homicide to the future of the Angels. Let's just call them the Angels, because nobody wants to call them Anaheim. Nobody wants to call them L.A. They were called the California Angels. A lot of good that did. The California Angels, by the way, folks, for those of you who don't know, that was the most embarrassing period in the history of the Angel franchise. They wore pajama bottoms, and I'm not saying literally, but they wore those outfits with the elastic waistband. They looked asinine. They looked as if they were in a circus. It was embarrassing.
You're a longtime Angel fan, right?
I am I've loved the Angels since they started in L.A.
Even though you're a resident of L.A. County, because I think a lot of people think or believe that the Angels, primarily their fan base is Orange County.
Well, no, the Angels started in Los Angeles. They started at Wrigley Field in Los Angeles. They started the old L.A. Wrigley Field that was owned by the Wrigley family, and at one time I think might have even had some spring training for the Cubs. And that's where they played. And then Gene Autry, who was a great cowboy and a great cowboy singer, but what he knew about baseball, you could stick in a can. And I love Gene Autry. I thought Gene Autry was a great man, and anybody who worked for Gene Autry loved him. But Gene Autry was a guy riding on a horse with a guitar, and you wanted to cry because you'd say, I'm an Angel fan, and the owner is someone that's sitting around a campfire, and you see what I'm saying?
And not literally sitting around a campfire.
What do you mean, literally?
Gene Autry was a cowboy in movies.
I know he was a cowboy in movies. I know that, but I'm saying his sensibility. Don't you think that guy... Phil, have you been to the Western Museum out in Palm Springs?
No, I have not.
That's a Gene Autry. And the guy owned a baseball team, and he's sitting on his can under the big, you know, canopy of sky, drinking that coffee they drink. You don't understand, do you?
You seem to think that Gene Autry was living the very life that he was singing.
What did you say?
You seem to think that Gene Autry, I'm an old cowhand on the Rio Grande, all that stuff?
Yeah.
But no, man, he was a multimillionaire. He was a movie star. He was a very accomplished man. He was a very smart guy with his dough. He bought TV stations. He bought radio stations. He bought a baseball team. He had a lot of money, and he held on to that team for many, many years, and they loved him. You're right. Gene Autry was beloved of his players, of his employees, of the fans. And what is this thing about sitting on his ass around a campfire?
That's what the guy was singing about. I don't know. But he's talking about, you know, get along, little doggy, and all that. And you want to say to the guy, hey, you know, tell you what you do, Tex. You go on, sit over there, have yourself a can of beans, and let somebody else run this show. Because he might have been beloved of his players, but the team stunk. It stunk like something that dropped out of one of those horses that Gene Autry was riding around, you know. And so I would say he was a great man. But when he put pajamas on that team and called them the California Angels and stuck them in that building down there in Anaheim, and for I don't know how many years, 30 years, 30 long years of loneliness, I will tell you.
All right, hold on. We have, Vernon Dozier is with us. I hate to cut him off, but we've got to get to our break. Vernon Dozier joining us here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we talk about the Anaheim Angels, possibly maybe even the L.A. Angels when they get done with this vote that they're about to take in Anaheim. It all has to do with the lease on the team. And his point is very simply this. The small-town name, Anaheim, Green Bay, Brooklyn, it's no good. They need to have big city names. The Green Bay Packers would be making far more money if they were the Milwaukee Packers. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Yeah. World famous Phil Hendry Show here, and a very, very warm welcome to you as we join you every weeknight, Monday through Friday, except for this week. Of course, we had Labor Day, and I was out of town. It was my birthday.
Phil, happy birthday. Did you get my birthday card?
I did not.
That makes sense, because I didn't mail one.
That's a good one.
Thank you. Give me five.
Yep. All right, enough with the gimme five.
No, I did mail you one, but then I decided that I would give you one. So there's one in the mail, and there's one that I have for you tonight.
Oh, well, thank you very much, and thank you, Bud and Robert. I got yours. And it's great, and I'm glad to have lived another year, and, you know, let's move on from here. Okay. Even though I have put on 20 extra pounds, I'm pushing 235 now. That really makes me angry. Now, to close out this this hour, we have Vernon Dozier with us. We discuss with Vernon the Anaheim Angels. Now, I know that what you're saying here, I suppose on the surface of this thing, Vernon, should make sense to me when you say that the Anaheim Angels have a small-town name, you know?
Well, all I'm saying is we've got to have a big city name for this team so that they start to sound like there's something you want to go see. I have, I'm going to tell you something, and I know there's more people than just me. I'm driving a long way to go see the Anaheim Angels, all right? I'm going a long way to go see the L.A. Angels of Anaheim. Where are you going? I'm driving a hell of a long way, and when I get there, I'm watching a team that's called the Anaheim Angels. I find that to be an insult. It grates on me when I've got a brother-in-law who has come to visit, let's say, from San Francisco. He's got the Giants. He's got the Oakland Athletics. But he's got the San Francisco Giants. Now, Oakland is compared to San Francisco, Oakland's a wide spot in the road. You could spit from one city limit to the next. I mean, what is Oakland? I didn't even know that you could. I didn't even know it was legal to call a team the Oakland anything because it sounds like a place where oil refineries ought to be, but other than that, forget it, you know?
Oakland?
Yes, Oakland. What does that mean, Oakland? I never even heard of the place.
Well, it's a, you know where it is.
I know where it is. What I'm trying to say to you is it don't sound big city. Miami, Chicago, New York, L.A., Houston's pushing it, but okay, we'll throw Houston in there. New Orleans. Okay? You know, this is St. Louis, Kansas City. These are big city-sounding names. You know, I think it's pushing me to say Milwaukee, but I'll go ahead and put Milwaukee. Now, maybe Seattle. You really start losing me when you start saying places like Jacksonville, Seattle. That ain't big city. No way, no how.
What about Baltimore?
Yeah, what about Baltimore?
Anybody else want to say,
yeah, what about Baltimore?
Baltimore, I think by virtue of the fact that, babe, I don't care. What I'm trying to say is this. If you want me to spend money, my hard-earned money on season tickets, we've got to call the team what it ought to be called, the Los Angeles Angels. And I believe that that's what it should be called. I don't give a damn where they play. They could play in Phoenix, Arizona. They should be called the Los Angeles Angels.
Well, I mean, you don't mean that literally, do you?
Well, I mean, you know, if the Phoenix Angels, I tell you something. I've never been a big fan of the way baseball, football, or any of the other sports expanded. I think they expanded too rapidly, and they expanded into markets that are embarrassing. Take a look at what happened there in Tampa Bay. Their football team, nobody wants to go near that football team. They think that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it used to be a football team, and now it's some kind of a crusting skin rash. I mean, that's the way they think of that team. They think about that team as if it's flaking skin. It's not even a football team.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, even I have heard of them.
I know you've heard of them because they actually played in a Super Bowl once.
Well, all right, so what do you mean they hate the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Guess what I said. They despise them. They hate them. They love the Tampa Bay Rays. They love that hockey team they got, the Lightning. But now the Buccaneers are like a running, seeping wound.
All right, enough with these images. I mean, come on.
I'm telling you, you think I'm stretching the truth. I'm not.
Well, I believe that there is an antipathy to the team that you're talking about, Vernon, but I agree with Phil. Some of the references are a little ghoulish.
Well, nonetheless, they don't like that team. Now, that ball club is owned by a family called the Glaziers, G-L-A-Z-E-R.
Be like Decker Glacier.
I didn't say Glacier. I didn't. I said Glazier, Glazer.
That's to the glacier.
Not a glacier, bud. G-L-A-Z-E-R.
All right.
Anyway, So the Glazer family, well, guess what else they own? The Glazer family owns the Manchester Uniteds. Have you ever heard of them?
Manchester United is a Barclays Premier League football team.
Yeah, well, it's a soccer team is what it is. Barclays, God bless you, Phil. Barclays Premier League, it's a soccer team, okay?
And it's the Manchester, it's Manchester United, not the Manchester Uniteds.
Well, all right, fine. But what I'm saying is, this is an American family that owns this soccer team. And all of the money and resources, do you know how much money that team makes?
The team's worth about $4.5 billion.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. You're kidding. No, I'm not. The Manchester United is the most valuable franchise, sports franchise in the world.
Exactly. That means that the Glazer family has got more money than God Almighty. They could buy and sell God. Okay? And you'd think, with the money they've got, that they'd do something to rehabilitate the image of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and do something, and move them out of that town. That's what I think they ought to do. Stick them in a big city, and let's rock and roll.
Well, what big cities are left to move a professional football team to? Otherwise, you've got two teams per market.
Well, I mean, if, what cities are left?
Okay, you going to say L.A.?
Yeah, how about L.A.? What do you mean, what city? L.A. is a perfect place. L.A. is a perfect place. The L.A. Buccaneers. Do you know that there used to be an L.A. Buccaneers? Did you know that, Phil?
No, I did not.
Well, there was. I would not recommend calling the Los Angeles Buccaneers because I think they got to lose that name. I think it's tainted. I think there's too much damage has been done. I think that people have identified it with large, gaping, oozing sores, with a skin rash, with anal cancer.
Oh, come on, will
you? What are you talking about? Are you saying this is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that John Gruden coached?
That's exactly the team I'm talking about. But they have been, they have, I'm telling you, their brand is damaged. And one of the first things that's damaged that brand is that funky, hunky, itsy-bitsy, teeny little burg they come from that's run by a bunch of Scientologists. Let's call a spade a spade. That whole area down there is run by L. Ron Hubbard's group. And what they know about football, you could stick in a thimble. All right, so I wouldn't put it past the Scientologists to take over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and turn them into a bunch of jackball. I don't know, man. You know, cats.
All right, well, Vernon, we will look into it, and I thank you very much for your participation on the show tonight.
Well, that's exactly what a guy would say to me if he thought I was nuts and he was trying to get rid of me.
That's right.
I hope you burn.
All right, Vernon Dozier, thank you, Vernon, for your contribution to our program this evening, and we will look into it. I swear on my mother that we'll look into it. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. What, bud?
Maybe you swear on your mother.
On my mother's grave. We'll look into it, Vernon. Don't worry about it. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show back for a final hour. Don Berman joins us. Bobby Dooley will be with us, too, to talk about being on Jay Moore's show tomorrow morning. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Boy, that's the biggest build-up to a...
That sound starts out, Doug. That sound like explosion.
What?
Sound like explosion.
Why don't you turn the music down and you can hear each other?
Oh, that's a good point. What, bud?
Sounds like an explosion.
All right, anyway, welcome to our program, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night here till 10 o'clock on the West Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast. Our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. My apologies again. David G. Hall wants to as well jump in and apologize for a series of comments made earlier in the program with regard to the television show The Walking Dead, and to join us and make his apologies. And then I, of course, will follow up with my own is David G. Hall. Go ahead, David.
Well, thanks very much. This is David G. Hall, Vice President of Syndication for the Phil Hendry Show. The show Walking Dead is a wildly popular program, a program that we know is loved and is watched and is enjoyed by millions of Americans. And the negative comments that were made about Walking Dead
We do not endorse, nor do I think Phil meant. And what those negative comments were is really beside the point. The fact that there was just negative references made, I'm sorry to hear that. And we would never intentionally insult a television show that so many people enjoy. And so to that end, Phil, what did you want to add?
Well, I think we have to get into the specifics of why people were complaining.
The specifics of why they were complaining.
Yeah.
David, that people were complaining because there was a reference made by Vernon Dozier that the zombies, as childish as this sounds, the zombies were performing some kind of oral sex on each other, but not the traditional kind. It had to do with, I don't want to be, you know, Phil, I'm a lady.
I understand. It had to do with the term eating them a new...
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. They're talking about eating each other.
All right, never mind, okay? So the apology had to be directed to that specific... We don't have to go any further than that.
But like, I'm on here saying that the people were... You guys were knocking Walking Dead.
I wasn't knocking Walking Dead at all. Vernon said that the show was about zombies eating each other a new one.
Oh, God. I had no idea.
Yeah, that's what Jim Bryce trying to say.
Is that what you were saying, Daphne? Daphne's laughing now because she kept sticking her tongue through the hole of a donut.
Well, at least she had donuts to demonstrate with.
Hey, Daphne. Henry got off a real cutie. He said, at least you had donuts. Then, yeah. Now she hates your guts even more.
Well, guess what, man? Every night I talk to you, she's at a donut shop.
I didn't call up about donuts. I called up to apologize to your listeners for bagging on Walking Dead. I had no idea you guys were on there talking about zombies eating each other's... You got to have some kind of a sick brain. And I mean a really sick brain.
I didn't bring it up. Dozier did.
I didn't bring it up. Dozier did.
You know, you some... Seriously, Phil, you sound as if you're recovering very slowly from a traumatic automobile accident that was brain injury. Like, you're doing well.
Goodbye.
Oh, now he's going to hang up on me.
To the extent that anybody was offended, we apologize. If you weren't, then we don't care.
Now, that's what you should have said in the beginning.
You're one of the people that started this whole thing.
Don't point your finger at me, Phil.
No, you are. You are. You're the one that got into this whole thing about the Walking Dead and eating each other anew. And the next thing you know, we got Dozier and I got Hall and I got this problem about oral sex. You got to have a brain. I agree with him. You got to have a sick brain to come up with that.
Yeah, well, you talk about eating another zombie out.
Oh, you shut up.
Eating another zombie out, man. What the hell?
What the hell kind of language is that?
Yeah, look, and she's got a... I want the record... Speaking of making the record clear, she's smiling.
No, I'm not. It's amusement.
Yeah, she's smiling. All right, the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Coming on the line here is going to be Jerry Kern, who is a doctor of anthropology as well as archaeology at... one of the institutes in California, I don't know which one it is. I thought it was UC Berkeley, right?
No, he's not at Berkeley any longer. He was.
He's not at Berkeley any longer. So he's at, I think it's the Archaeological Institute in Malibu. But we'll get him on the line to talk about something that... this was quite an amazing discovery when it occurred. And they are making even more discoveries as they continue to investigate this site. And we're talking about the archaeological dig that did eventually dig up the remains of King Richard III. King Richard III, for those of you who may not know, was famous for certain physical deformities. He had a hunched back. He had one of his hands, I think, was malformed. He was a warrior king nonetheless. Richard III was also considered to be quite a despot, meaning he was not kind to his people during the years of his reign. We're talking the 15th century, which would make this, in the 1400s. Now they're finding that in the skeletal remains of Richard III, which, by the way, they were able to construct a facial reconstruction of Richard III, And it's an amazing thing. You can look it up online. From the skull, they constructed Richard III's face, the head, the actual look of the man. What did he look like? And it's quite similar to, as you might guess, to the paintings and the portraits that were done of him during that particular time.
Yeah, well, that makes only going to make sense.
Yeah, but then I'm always going to write. Well, Robert's making a good point. You know, sometimes portraits were fanciful. Sometimes they were created to bring out certain characteristics, internal characteristics of the subject. So they weren't always the most accurate physically. They were painted to lend a positive view of an individual from the standpoint of their character, as opposed to necessarily their physiology. Dr. Kern joining us here from Malibu tonight. Dr. Kern, thank you for being on the air with us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Can you tell us what these new discoveries have yielded?
Well, these discoveries that you're speaking about were made by Bath University. There were a number of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine weighed in. Simon Booker is one of the hygienists at the London School. Lancet, which is the medical journal of the British medical establishment, was the first to publish this discovery, because it's not really archaeological more than it is systemic. It is archaeological, it's anthropological, and it's also historical, because what they found was evidence of a roundworm infection of the King of England, King Richard III. And it was quite acute. The monarch, who had, as you mentioned at the outset, a hunchback, a scoliosis, they believe, he had a very brief and violent reign. He had parasitic worms that grew to a foot long.
A foot long?
That is correct, yes.
Now, was this common in those days, Doctor?
It was very common. Roundworm was very common. In the remains that were discovered last year beneath this parking lot in Leicester, they say they discovered numerous roundworm eggs in the soil around his pelvis, where his intestines would have been. They compared that to soil samples taken close to Richard's skull and surrounding the grave. There were no eggs near the skull and only traces of eggs in the soil near the grave.
All right, so what does that say?
That says that there was a concentration of roundworm in the actual body of Richard III, but that it was not, in other words, the result of roundworm eggs being in the soil where he was eventually laid to rest. In the 15th century, roundworm was very common because of poor hygiene practices. These days, we've got about 820 million people worldwide are infected with roundworm, which can be treated with a pill. Worms are a remaining problem today, as they once were even for nobility, but not for the very wealthy any longer.
We're talking here with Dr. Clay Kern from the Archaeological Institute in Malibu, California, about the discovery that Richard III had roundworms. And Richard III's remains were discovered this past summer underneath a parking lot, as you just heard the doctor say, in Leicester, England. They did determine that this was, in fact, these were the remains of Richard III by DNA testing. They have at least two ancestors of members of Richard III's progeny that live today, and did the DNA testing against those individuals and came up with a positive match. He was a man with scoliosis. He had a lot of different problems, didn't he?
Well, Richard III, when you're talking about these roundworms, for instance, Phil, it would have given him a great deal of discomfort as these worms hatched and matured in his intestines and migrated to his lungs and his throat. It would have caused coughing and breathing problems. The king's doctors would not have linked those symptoms to the worms. They probably would have prescribed treatments that included bloodletting. We doubt that the worms would have worsened Richard's spinal deformity. We know, for instance, from the historical writing and the plays of William Shakespeare, He's depicted as a hunchback regent who had his two young nephews murdered so he could claim the English throne. He died on the battlefield in 1485, was the last English king that was killed in a war, and has long been one of the country's most reviled kings. Some have blamed his reputation on the Tudor monarchs who succeeded him and hope the discovery of a skeleton will spur scholarship that corrects what they think is an injustice. But nonetheless, he was a very ill, he was a bad-tempered man, but we're getting an idea now as to why. The bad temper.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're a little late for our break. We're going to come back here with Dr. Kern and discuss more Richard III and the discovery now among the remains of Richard III of roundworm eggs, meaning this man had a, not only did he suffer from scoliosis, which was a spinal curvature of the spine, he had roundworms, and he had a bad, bad case of roundworms. And I mean, to me, this kind of stuff is what?
I'm going to be sick. I don't know. You want to keep talking about this?
Yes, I do want to keep talking. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Thanks a lot for the backup there.
Yeah.
World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast. And we're online at philhenryshow.com. And we have with us Dr. Clay Kern from the Archaeologic Institute of Malibu as we continue talking with him about the discovery of roundworms in the remains of Richard III. Now, I don't know how many people are really all that interested in this. I don't know how many people realize just how profound it is to discover the remains of an English king that are, it's, you know, 500 years old, to be able to identify this man. A man who's been written about, a man who's had plays written about him, a man who's a part of mythology, if you will, to get some real look at the guy and to find that some of the mythology and some of the legend is actually true, where he was born.
Well, that's true, and it's also true to be able to track not only where he died, but also where he was buried. That was very important. We know that Richard III was buried by his enemies. And they did bury him in a chapel, which no longer exists. But as has been indicated, the final resting place of Richard III was in this chapel that over time decayed, was destroyed, or otherwise displaced by other structures and other topography until we had in the 21st century this parking structure for automobiles under which is this 15th century king, yes.
So the roundworms affected his health. We know a horrifying case of these things if they were a foot long. And you had some opinion on this in Lancet by way of a letter, correct?
I had published a letter to the editors of Lancet making my own claim that Richard III, I think, was bolstered by this discovery, the strength of the man, the character of the man, bolstered by the discovery that he suffered from such a malady. The roundworms would have been, as has been indicated, I think, by the forensic anthropologists and forensic scientists that looked at this, would have made his life very difficult to live, and it would have made his life very painful. And yet Richard III was able to, through his reign, to defeat enemies, to control a kingdom, to control the administration of a government, and even though he was in agony, and I think what that and even though he was deformed, and there was even some speculation that Richard III was a homosexual. For those times, we're not entirely clear whether being a homosexual in the 15th century was as much of an anathema as it became. It might well have been in some political sectors. It could have been used as a some kind of a political leverage against the king. But with all of the negatives in his life, including and not withstanding this horrible physical condition that Richard III had, he was a powerful king that was a very formidable to his opponents and has come down through history that way. So that only strengthens the man's case. character in my eyes and the eyes of others.
That it strengthens his character, meaning you find him to be a better man than history has allowed for?
I think so, yes, because if you're suffering under this horrible malady of roundworms that was prevalent in the 15th century, there was no medicine for this. Better hygiene and better food preservation practices would have helped, but no one knew this. Here is a man suffering from a parasite that has invaded his intestines and his stomach and is now literally creeping up the esophagus into his mouth. It is consuming him from the inside, and yet he wouldn't even let that defeat him. He stood in battle. He signed legislation. He was a husband. He was a father. He was an uncle. He was an aunt. He wasn't an aunt, but he suffered the homosexuality, the ostracization of being a homosexual, even though he was married and had children, and all the while with roundworms in his guts and a crooked spine that made him walk with this ungodly gait. And there he was, and now he's making history. You see, to me, that's a formidable guy. And I beg to differ with people that think that Richard III was a bad man. I say it takes guts and it takes determination. It takes intestinal fortitude beyond anything anyone I know of could even remotely approach to be the man he was, with his guts being eaten out day in and day out, morning, noon, and night. And if it was happening to me, I'd commit suicide. I don't know of anything else that I might do.
Dr. Clay Kern with us. Well, let's go ahead and say the man was living the tortures of the damned. How that makes him a better man?
Yes, that's a very good question, Doctor, because couldn't you equally say that that's why he was a warring king? That's why he was considered to be very... Where are you right now?
I'm in a machine shop here on the campus of the Archaeological Institute. What we're attempting to do is build a memorial to Richard III that we want to have erected at a certain point in Leicester to him. And to say this was a great man, even though he had no right to feel good. Each day he woke up and he had his... living, you see, I can't get very graphic because I know what you people will do. You'll probably dump it. But I'm just here to tell you that he has my admiration because I would have committed suicide.
Well, yeah, and I would have too, you know.
And I don't think that people have given him his due.
But he was defeated in his final battle. He was killed and he was laid to rest there in a rather ignominious fashion. His enemies certainly didn't respect him at all. And... And his own people did not bury him, history has treated him thus.
Well, history may have treated him thus, but the memorial that we want to erect, which is of Richard III with a dagger, and he's driving it into his own abdomen, and the reason why is not because it's a suicide, it's because he is saying to the worms that are invading him, you know what? Go straight to hell. I'm going to kill myself. I'm not going to kill myself. I'm killing the worms. I'll live. You see?
All right, Doc, hold on for a minute. It looks like he's got a memorial that he's building to Richard III that shows him driving a dagger into his own stomach, Harry Carey style.
Harry Carey, you mean the...
Not the baseball announcer, the way they committed suicide in Japan.
I don't know.
What is that?
Never mind. We'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show with Dr. Kern.
Wow. Dr. Harry Carey, man, is the way the Japanese commit suicide.
Right.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Watch not only our video cast every night, but you can watch the archives. You can just watch it, you know, as the reboot of the Phil Henry Show, the retooling of the Phil Henry Show, the recreation of the Phil Henry Show continues. And I think it's going to be a fascinating process watching just exactly where this here show heads to and becomes. A lot of exciting things ahead of us. Bobby Dooley's going to join us here in the last quarter hour to talk about her appearance on Jay Moore tomorrow morning, the Jay Moore Sports Show, Jay Moore Sports. And Bobby was on last week. She's become a bit of a fixture over there with Jay Moore, so she'll be talking about that. We have Dr. Clay Kern here with us from the Archaeological Institute of Malibu as we discuss Richard III. Now, this is a king I'm sure many of you have heard of, at least in some tangential way, some sort of peripheral way, a famous English king. Tell us a little bit about Richard III so we get some context here, Doc.
Richard III, Phil, was a king in the 15th century of the final Plangenet member of the Plangenet dynasty. He was the last of the House of York kings. His death precluded the continuation of that line, and his death in the War of the Roses. It was the Battle of Bosworth where he was eventually killed. And this brought about the Tudor dynasty, of which a great many famous kings were members. Henry VIII was a Tudor. Henry VII was the one who defeated Richard. His remains were buried without any pomp, as you indicated. They were lost for more than five centuries, and then, of course, in 2012, the archaeological excavation discovered them. He was a man that outlived two rebellions against him, because when he became king, many considered him an illegitimate king insofar as the fact was he became a Lord Protector, because Edward IV's offspring were to become the kings of England, and his marriage, Edward IV's marriage, was declared invalid, which made his offspring bastards, as they said in those days, and so Richard became king, and there were two rebellions. So in the memorial that we've created for Richard III, a man who suffered from roundworms, a man who had scoliosis of the spine, a man who might have been a homosexual, which meant nothing other than he would have suffered the social the barbs that one would suffer, and on top of that, two rebellions. This was not an easy life, and yet he was a victorious. So the memorial we created shows him in three reliefs. One is defeating one rebellion, then another rebellion, and then driving a sword into his own stomach, not to commit suicide, but to kill the roundworms that he was suffering from. And then another sword in the final relief, showing him cutting his own head off to relieve the agony of the scoliosis. And yet he lived. What killed him was battle. And that's why we feel this memorial is fitting.
And what kind of reception have you received for this?
Understandably, the people of Leicester are understandably opposed to it because they think that it's negative. And I have gone three times to England to press the case. I've made my case before the city council there three times. And I've almost gotten on my hands and knees and begged and groveled and pleaded with these idiots. And I use that word, that pejorative, Phil, because I think it's necessary at this time to enlist the aid of the public, that I am going to England and I'm dealing with idiots in the City Council of Leicester when I say to them, this is a memorial that is it's praising Richard III when it shows him defeating his enemies in battle twice, driving a dagger into his own stomach and then cutting his own head off to say, damn you to hell, roundworms, and go to hell, scoliosis of the spine. I will not be defeated.
Well, I got to tell you, I haven't seen this memorial.
Well, then, if you're going to say something negative, I think you need to keep that in mind, and the audience should keep in mind you've never seen it.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I haven't seen it, but driving a dagger into his own guts and cutting his own head off looks like suicide.
It's not suicide, but it's not suicide.
Yes, but doctor, how do you explain that to the casual viewer? A casual observer of the memorial would have to think these were acts of madness.
No, not if they know how to read. If they know how to read, then they can read the inscription on the plaque, which says, Richard III symbolically drives a dagger into his own stomach to rid himself of the agony of spastic colon, roundworm, and chronic diarrhea. And then in the next relief, Richard III cuts his own head off and lays himself on the rack so that his spine can be straightened by men who otherwise were only trained in torture. You see? So.
Yeah, but if you've got a guy cutting his head off, he's cutting off his own head and then he's what?
He's cutting off his own head and then he's laying himself on the rack so they can stretch him and straighten out this crooked spine of his. So he's saying to these men who were trained only in torture, why don't you guys do something that's going to help somebody for a change and straighten my back out? So that's part of the memorial, you see?
But people are going to think that that is some kind of history.
No, they won't think it's history because we say that this is a fanciful and symbolic of Richard III dealing with the maladies that he had. Don't you understand? Right now we're constructing. You can hear our... We've had the equipment going for the last 48 hours solid. I'm not giving anyone any rest. No one has gotten any sleep. And they're operating saws and lathes, Phil, so there could be very serious injury. But all of that is going to be put in abeyance because I want this memorial ready so that we can get on the road with it next week and get to London and finally on to Leicester and present it to them.
I don't know what kind of success you're going to find, if you don't mind us commenting.
No, please do. I want to know what people think.
I don't know what success you're going to find with a memorial that is that. It seems like an entirely disjointed. I could misinterpret that.
Well, slow down. What do you mean?
Well, can I say something here, Dr. Kern?
Of course.
If you have him cutting his own head off and then laying himself on a rack to have his spine straightened...
That's a good point. How is he alive if he cut his own head off?
I said it's symbolic.
Well, why did he cut his own head off?
Because he wants to get his mind out of the way and go straight for the problem. See, if he didn't cut his own head off, he would never think to use the rack to straighten his spine. I don't know yet. We may keep his head back. He may cut his head off after his spine straightened. I don't know. We're still right now putting together the first two reliefs of the victory in battle at the rebellion. Then the next relief will be curing himself of roundworm by gutting himself.
It's a very violent series of pictures. They're awfully strange.
What do you mean by strange? This I gotta hear. What do you mean by strange?
This you gotta hear? How about the guy gutting himself because he has roundworm?
Because he's in agony, and yet he will not let anything keep him from his appointed rounds as king.
And this doesn't kill him?
No, it doesn't kill him because he was killed in a battle. He was killed in a battle, for God's sake.
Don't talk to... Dr. Kern, I'm trying to be very, very polite and understand what you're saying.
Forgive me. I'm sorry. I'm very short-tempered with, not you, Ms. Gray, but I'm very short-tempered in general with idiots and people smaller than me. I have a message and I have something I want the world to hear about Richard III. And these small little men and small people are holding me back. You understand, Mr. Henry?
I understand. I don't want...
I understand. You sound as if you're placating a madman.
No, I don't think I'm placating a madman so much as I'm communicating with someone who's very single-minded. I'm saying, if you have this memorial that has such violent and, quite frankly, bizarre depictions, I don't know if you're going to get your message across.
Why? What is it about the... Well, tell me.
First of all, he gets the idea of straightening his spine by laying himself on the rack and teaching people that used to be torturers how to straighten a man's spine.
Well, I didn't put it quite that clumsy, but that's in essence the point, yes.
And what is the point?
The point is that Richard III was able to take two men who up to that point had tortured people for a living and gave them a new job. If you want, chiropractor. If you want to go that far, osteopath, if you want to go that far, I think, but do you understand?
Yeah, but there's no historical basis in any of this. We don't know that Richard III actually taught anybody to be a chiropractor.
But we do know he had a crooked spine and a gut full of worms, and a guy like that isn't going to sit still for it. I'll tell you that right now. What I've studied about Richard III, he wouldn't sit still for 5 seconds with round worms. And I'm going to tell you something right now. When I was in the service, I saw guys who had worms, and you don't want to know anything about that. You don't believe me. And this guy in the morning is sitting down on the toilet, and at night, and that's what's coming out? No thanks. And yet he persevered,
Yeah, he persevered, and then he reigned for 2 years, and then he got killed in battle.
About 2 years longer than you or I would have, my friend. Believe me. Right now, you can hear, I got guys working around the clock. You're sitting here giving me a hard time. You hear that? I got guys working around the clock to get this thing done. When we get this thing back to Lester, they're going to be holding on for mercy. Thank you very much. This is Dr. Kern from the whatever this is, the archaeological, I was going to say astrologic institute. Hold on, Herman, how you coming?
Yeah, I think it's going to be real good, Doc. Doc, get that picture of him there.
That's a picture of Richard III, Phil. I want you to know there's a picture of Richard III. And what are you making?
I'm going to make the carving.
That's right. So that's how, I forget here. What's your name, Junior?
Yeah.
Junior's working on that. So we've got a whole bunch of guys that are all over this like white on rice. And even you, Henry, can't stop me.
Thanks very much, Doc. All the best.
You bet.
I think that man will never get out of the country with that.
I agree. I don't think he'll get out of that school. I don't think he'll even finish out the night's work because they'll get raided by the state of California for keeping underage kids working on. What the hell is he doing?
Doggy's like working on a memorial and everything.
It's 11 o'clock, almost 10 o'clock at night.
Well, you said it was 11, almost 10. No, it's, what is it?
It's almost 10 o'clock. And I'm listening to skill saws going, and I'm listening to buzzing sounds, and some guy named Junior, that guy's a student?
Yeah, it might be one of those manual arts type places. It might not even be...
Well, it's called the Anthropological Institute.
No, not that. It's called Archaeological.
Archaeologic Institute.
Yes. That doesn't mean they can't have a guy named Junior working there. What kind of archaeologists are these?
Well, you tell me.
Well, they might be real low-level archaeologists.
Yeah, probably guys like just work with a bucket and one of those, like, sand pails.
Yeah.
Are you serious? Are you trying to tell me they have archaeologists that work with buckets and sand pails?
If they're low-level archaeologists, you got a guy there named Junior. How bright is he going to be?
Not very.
Well, that's the whole point. So if an archaeological institute, they're turning archaeologists to using sand buckets... And,
yeah, sand bucking them sand forks and stuff.
And they're archaeologists, huh?
Of a kind, yes. They're doing archaeological digs that are maybe only a foot deep.
Yeah, a foot deep, and they're digging up, like, you know, if a guy smoked a cigarette or something.
What?
What are you talking? Are you telling me that this is for real?
I'm saying it's possible.
You got a guy named Junior want to be an archaeologist, what you going to do? I'd give him a bucket. A little buck, you know, a little shovel, a little kid use, and send him out on the beach.
Really? How about if you put him in a little pair of those Donald Duck water wings, too?
Maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe, maybe not.
All right, we'll be back.
Well, Phil, it's easy for you to laugh at people that are less fortunate.
I'm not laughing at people less fortunate. I'm laughing at the notion that you take some guy who is less fortunate and turn him into some kind of a half-assed archaeologist with a sand bucket.
I hope God forgives you because I certainly won't.
Oh, come on, Margaret.
No, I won't.
All right, we'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Henry show. Sorry I pissed her off again, man. What do you want me to say? We'll be back to close out here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com, 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. Bobby Dooley tomorrow morning on Jay Moore Sports. We'll have Bobby on here in just a second. World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 10 o'clock here on the West Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast. And we've got Bobby Dooley on the line with us. Bobby is, I guess, a regular feature now or a semi-regular feature, or maybe not a regular feature at all. Maybe this is going to be the last week. You blew it yesterday, Bobby, didn't you? That's what I heard anyway. I heard that you were supposed to be there at Jay's. You're supposed to be on the air with Jay. Where the hell is Bobby?
Get on the line. Ms. Dooley, you there? Ms. Dooley, you there? Hey, Miss Dooley, is you there?
Don't keep yelling for her, man. Was she there or wasn't she?
Was there, man. I don't know what happened.
In any event, Bobby Dooley was supposed to be on with Jay this morning, and something went wrong. Like, I'll tell you what went wrong. Maybe she slept in. Who knows? Hey, Bobby, how are you? Phil Henry.
Hi, Phil. No, I didn't sleep in. I totally forgot because of Labor Day that we were supposed to be on this morning with Jay. I called him up. I was very apologetic. I know it probably, you know, made him look bad, and I'm sorry, Jay. And I said I was sorry again, so...
I don't want to say sorry, too.
My husband, Steve, is here. He said, how many times do you expect me to say I'm sorry?
Just once. You know, I just, you know... was Jay okay with that?
He was fine with it. I think Jay understands that, you know, the holiday weekend, which was the Labor Day weekend, which celebrates the labor. I don't want to get into what it celebrates because I always make a mistake. It's called Labor Day, yeah.
I know what Labor Day is. Let's forget about what, you know, describing that.
So I'm embarrassed enough that I missed Jay's show this morning, and I can only hope that, you know, they'll treat me well on the show tomorrow, but we'll see.
Well, he didn't treat you well the first time when he was on your podcast.
When he was on my podcast, yeah, he was... you know, Jay was a guy that, you know, he said that he wanted to push my face into the cab seat and take me to Oakland and have his way with me. Jay's a clown. There's no question he's a clown.
So you didn't take him seriously?
Well, I did take him seriously because that's what he did do, but...
So he took you to Oakland?
He took you to Oakland after pushing your face into the vinyl of a filthy cab and did what?
That's really nothing I'm going to get into, okay?
Well, there are a lot of women who want to know.
That's really nothing I'm going to get into, okay?
Bobby.
That's really nothing I'm going to get into, okay?
Fine.
All right, I think we've gotten the message.
What's the message?
That's nothing she's going to get into.
Okay.
So, Bobby, being on the... how do you do with sports? I mean, are you good with it? Are you bad with it?
Well, he was asking me questions about USC, which I love USC football. I went to USC for 3 years. I did not go my senior year.
Why did you only go 3 years?
Well, I decided I didn't want to go there anymore. And I went to, I finished up at Pierce College, you know, so.
Well, you had 3 years of college under your belt, and you didn't get your final year. Were you able to get your degree?
No, I wasn't, because I was told that you couldn't get your four-year degree from a two-year. So I just went, well, you know what, forget it then. I mean, if that's the way they're going to be about it. So I didn't get my four-year.
Why did you not go all 4 years to USC?
Well, it's a really long story, but it's really a long, long, long story. But basically, Steve and I were, I think it was unfair. Steve, do you want to tell him?
About I was doing dark.
Steve was arrested. When I met Steve, I met him my junior year. He was selling fake IDs and was mainlining Darvon at that time, right, Steve?
At that time.
But not anymore.
Not anymore.
And so when we met, he was arrested for, I guess, possession of a controlled substance. I saw him crushing up Darvon into a spoon.
Hold on for a minute here. This is really behavior that goes to the very heart and to the very soul of what we talk about when we talk about parenting.
Absolutely. So you have no problem coming on the air and talking about this?
I have no problem coming on the air and talking about how unfair it was that I was asked to leave USC. And also, yes, my grades were not good enough, and my father pulled me out.
So why did you leave USC then?
Because my father pulled me out because my grades were not good enough because Steve was...
Yeah, I mainlined Darvon.
Because Steve was mainlining Darvon.
Your grades weren't good enough because your father pulled you out because Steve was mainlining Darvon.
That's right, and we'll get into it more tomorrow on the Jay Moore show because I don't really want to waste all of my grade A material on you, but I will say that... You know, we felt it was unfair.
All right, well, I don't want you to waste your grade A material on us, so bye-bye, Bobby.
Jesus.
What a snoot.
Yeah, so listen to Jane Moore tomorrow. Maybe she'll get into it, maybe she won't. Phil Henry Show, we'll see you guys tomorrow night. Thanks for listening. We'll have our show log up on philhenryshow.com and also a brand-new podcast tomorrow, classic podcast tomorrow at philhenryshow.com. And until then, we love you, we need you, we can't live without you, and let that be a lesson to you.